This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guests today are Eric Hellman and Andromeda Yelton from Unglue It, the site that allows crowdsourcing to free ebooks from DRM and be licensed through Creative Commons. You can find them online at unglue.it. Eric and Andromeda, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Double.
The first question I wanted to ask was probably the most important one, and that's for Andromeda. And I need to know if Carl Castle is still the voice on your home answering machine.
Carl Castle is the voice on my husband's voicemail. It was my Christmas present to him a few years ago.
And if people want to know more about that, you wrote a nice little blog post up a couple years ago about that of being on Wait. So.
I did. In fact, there's complete instructions on my blog if anyone wants to know how to accomplish the same.
And I listened to it, and they gave you a little bit of trouble about your name, but
yeah, that was, you know, the day we had final projects in a library school class, which had all been deleted 24 hours in advance. So it's possible I wasn't thinking on my feet as much as I would have liked to have been.
Okay, well, let's get started on talking about Unglue It. Eric, that kind of came from, it was sort of your little brainchild. Can you tell me how that first kind of came to your mind, that this is something that you wanted to do?
Well, it came I had a lot of ideas about what I wanted to do, you know, after I left the CLC 3 years ago. And, you know, I decided to take my time and started blogging. And, you know, everything was all about ebooks and libraries and the Google Books settlement and everything. And so I spent a while and started talking to people and found out all sorts of things about ebooks that I didn't know before. And I realized that you know, somebody needed to figure out a way to make ebooks into public to part of the public sector for ebooks, to allow books that were still worth something join the pantheon of the world's greatest literature that's currently in the public domain. And it's going to take 100 years or so to get some of the in-copyright stuff into the public domain. So the second best thing is the public commons using Creative Commons licenses. So that's what we're doing.
And how did you come up with the name?
Well, that's an interesting story. The name of the company is Glue Jar. All we're doing is Unglue It, but the name Glue Jar dates back to 2006 when I sold Openly Informatics to OCLC, and OCLC bought the business, the assets, the employees, the customers, and the company name, but not the company itself. And so I had to come up with a new name for the corporate entity. And I asked, I used a very expensive naming consultant, namely my 12-year-old son. and he helped me come up with the name Glue Jar, because he asked me, "Well, what should it mean?" And I said, "Well, it's just going to contain stuff, and I like sticking things together." And he said, "Oh, how about Goo Jar? That sounds good." And so I checked to see if Goo Jar was available, and I found out that it was the name of a people in India, so it probably wouldn't be a good name. And then we just modified the goo to glue, and then we had Glue Jar, and that was a fun name. So Glue Jar just sat around for 3 or 4 years, not doing anything except just being there and having a bank account. And when we were trying to figure out a name for this new project to crowdfund Creative Commons ebooks, you know, we tried a lot of names, and they were kind of stupid. we thought, hey, why don't you use the glue from the company name to sort of make up a new verb for this process that we're doing, so that instead of saying, well, we're crowdfunding payments to rights holders to convert published books into Creative Commons ebooks, instead we can just say we're ungluing books, which works just fine.
And
so
how much,
that's what we're doing.
How much did your naming consultant charge you?
He didn't charge me anything, but he's very expensive because I'm paying tuition at USC. He's a freshman there.
So after you kind of got an idea what you wanted to do, how did you put your team together? I imagine some sort of Mission Impossible kind of scenario, but I don't know if it's that exciting. But.
No, it's not very exciting. Andromeda can tell you her story.
I mean, I had met Eric because we go to the same parties at ALA and subsequently followed each other's blogs. So pretty much my first memory of my future boss is having a conversation with him under a 12-foot sparkling silver shoe in a gay bar in D.C. But, you know, we followed each other's blogs, we talked, and then he was founding this company, and I thought it sounded like it was really fun, and I was really jealous that people would get to do fun startup things, but I had just graduated from library school and didn't really feel like I had the skill set he was looking for and left a sad comment to that effect on his blog. And a couple weeks later, I got, I think, a DM from you on Twitter to the effect of, why didn't you have my resume yet? So I sent you my resume instantaneously. And it kind of went from there.
And what is your role now in the company?
Well, I do whatever needs doing that nobody else is doing. So, I mean, librarians are generalists, right? And we have the very clear software engineer person, who's Raymond, and we have Amanda, who's the very clear, knows the publishing industry. And, you know, Eric runs around doing president-y stuff, which is also a little bit of a lot of different things. And then I just do whatever isn't under those rubrics. So I do web development, which is something I had never done before I worked here. I do social media and public speaking and writing and rallying the internets and talking to librarians and listening to librarians and hand-holding our rights holders and, you know, pretty much whatever seems to need to be done.
And how did Amanda and Raymond come into the mix? Eric, did you know them already, or Andromeda, did you know them?
I knew Raymond from quite a number of years ago, and I always admired his work. And, you know, when I put out the word that I was looking for someone, you know, he stuck his hand up, and I said, hey, that's amazing. Finding a book industry person was a lot harder. And so I advertised in some book industry places. And the reason it's so hard is that the book industry is so mature that everybody is really specialized. And they know one thing really, really well. And that doesn't work very well in a startup because we need people who can be very broad. And Amanda had immediately understood what we were doing and had the experience doing rights and had the experience at university presses and had the experience as a literary agent. And so she's been a good fit.
And about how long do you think it took from sort of the real, once the idea had solidified into what you really wanted to do from that point to actually getting up and running?
Well, we had our first meeting, I think, on the hottest day of the century in what was it, a year ago in July?
Something like that.
And
we'd already been working before then, though.
We'd been working, but we sort of the crystallization of the concepts of what we're doing sort of came out of that in-person meeting. And, you know, we're a virtual company. We all work from home from four different states. And it's really important to have those in-person meetings to sort of hash out the uncertainties and, you know, make everyone clear as to what we're doing. And from that point, we engaged some people to help us with the software and the design. And so we had our preview version ready in we let people see that in January of this year. And then we had our first go around with payment providers. We waited forever for PayPal to approve us, and they ended up never. They kept on coming back to us with updates and never quite approved us. And in April, I decided it was long enough, and we switched to Amazon Payments. And so, you know, we had that up and running, and we launched in May. And we had our first campaign success in June. And in August, Amazon shut us off, and we had to go through the whole payment thing once again. And then we relaunched with Stripe as our payment provider in October. And it's been like about a month now that we've been back in business.
And are things going pretty smoothly with Stripe so far?
The ability to monitor what's going on with Stripe is far better than with Amazon Payments. And so we're a lot more comfortable with the way things are going with Stripe.
And the one campaign you had that was successful under Amazon, did all that go smoothly with that one campaign? I mean, all the payments went through and everything as it was supposed to?
Yeah, of course, we learned a lot never having done that before, but we raised $7,500 and, you know, sent a check off to the rights holder. That was a nice feeling.
Can you guys, one or the other of you, kind of go over the broad overview? We've kind of given a broad overview sort of what Unglue It is doing. Can you get a little more specific about, I know you have to use the words like rights holders instead of authors because you're dealing with people that you're dealing with copyright and things like that, of how exactly a book goes from how you choose a book to be unglued and how it gets through that process?
Well, we don't choose books to be unglued. We're not a gatekeeper. We're not a pub. We don't consider ourselves to be publishers, although we do take on some of the chores that are usually done by publishers. We see our role as being advocates for the supporters and making sure that people who run campaigns really do have the rights to release something as Creative Commons, and that they have the wherewithal to deliver a good technical quality digital book file. So if we're confident of those two things, we don't select based on you know what the book is. We don't consider that to be our job, because how do we know what the people will support? That they're the people who support the campaigns. They're the ultimate gatekeepers.
And the first book that you had that was successful was The Oral History of Africa, and that was. Can you talk a little about that book, how that came to your notice and how that became one of the first books you used?
Well, it's a funny story, like many of these things. Half of the campaigns we've run have been ones that we've sought out. The other half are and increasingly the new ones are authors and publishers that have sought us out. But Oral History of Africa was a case where it happened both ways. I learned about Open Book Publisher in January and sent them an email. And while my email was going across the Atlantic, an email from Open Book Publishers was going to me saying, "Hey, we just learned about Unglue It. We have this perfect project for you." And it was like it was meant to be.
And so Andromeda, have you done a lot of work working with libraries? Have you worked with libraries to try to get the books that are unglued into the libraries? Or are you guys just making them kind of available and libraries should seek you out if they want to have them in their collections?
No, we've definitely been working with them. So with Oral Literature in Africa, we got help from Aaron Leach, who's actually a cataloger, to generate a MARC record so that as soon as it was unglued, people could put it into their collections. And that MARC record links straight to the unglued ebook edition at Internet Archive. And then OCLC and Sky River both picked that up. And I talked to a bunch of librarians about the fact that that record existed, and a bunch of libraries put it immediately into their collection, and that was really gratifying because that's what you really want, is to see the book out in the world where people can use it.
And that does bring up something too. You said all the files then will be hosted on Internet Archive, is that right?
That's right, although since they're Creative Commons licensed, people are welcome to copy them, to shift them to other formats, to host them on whatever servers they like. So if you have a preservation strategy you prefer, you can do that. We've been talking to Lox about preserving stuff with them too, so we hope that they're going to be safe in perpetuity.
That's great. So, but then when people go to your site and download it, that copy that they're downloading is coming from Internet Archive, is that correct?
Yeah, that's our reference copy is there.
Okay, and I believe also you guys don't – do you do any work with helping people put together their ebook, or do they need to come to you with a ready-to-go package?
Yeah, we do quality control, but we ask them to do that themselves. And there's a ton of third-party vendors that will help you make an EPUB if you don't already have one. So we ask them just to think about that when they're thinking about their campaign price, if there's going to be conversion costs they're going to need to cover. Of course, Open Book Publishers already does ebooks, so they had no problem coming up with a really beautiful ebook edition.
And another new feature you guys just rolled out was that you have the send to read mill function. Can one of you all talk about that a little bit, about how that works and how you came to have that relationship?
Readmill is, how would you describe it? It's a social network of readers, and they have a really nice reading application for the iPad. I had met the founder last year, and when he saw we had released the book, he said, "Hey, why don't you add this button that we've developed? It'll make it really easy for people to download the to their reading environment if they're using Readmill." And we tried it out, and it was really great. So we put that button in, and one click of a button loads the book into the Readmill reading environment.
And I think one of the things that's worth noting about Readmill is because it's social, and because it's not linked to any particular publisher's reading ecosystem, it really needs ebooks without DRM. And this is an example of the kind of thing you can do if you have ebooks that aren't locked down to a particular reading ecosystem. So it's nice to be able to facilitate those kinds of conversations about books that aren't necessarily facilitated by the walled gardens we usually have.
Right. And right now, and before the Amazon shut down, you guys had 5 books up, and now you've got 5 books up now. Is that sort of going to be the general thing? You're going to have 5 books campaigns going at the same time, at one time?
I'd like to have 5,000.
So there's no set number that should be going at one time?
Nope.
Can you all talk about what books are being campaigned right now?
What are we excited about? Andromeda, you go.
What are we excited about? I mean, there's this is a library audience. I'm excited about Lauren Presley's book that is in progress right now, So You Want to Be a Librarian, which is geared at library students or prospective library school students, and it really gives an overview of the types of jobs in the field and the issues in librarianship, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with because you've interviewed Lauren Presley before. And I just have this like fantasy vision of this book being available for download on every library school, admission site or advising program, because it lets them further their mission and it lets the field recruit people who might be interested in librarianship. And that's something you can do with a Creative Commons licensed book that you can't do if you had to pay for every single copy individually. So I'm really hoping that we can get librarians excited about ungluing something that, that is really for the benefit of librarianship.
And conversely, if you know, people think that they want to be a librarian, but really when they find out what the job is, then, you know, they realize that it wasn't for them. You know, if a book like this can help people make decisions correctly, think of how valuable that is, that could be to someone.
Right. And was Lauren one of the cases that she came to you, or did you seek her out?
Yeah, we were a couple tables down from the publisher at ALA and just kept crossing paths.
Literally.
Literally. Yeah, we hung out. It was fun.
So you might say it was another book that fate brought to us.
Exactly. And I did want to ask one thing. I know one of the models that, Eric, you wrote about is that you're sort of using the public radio model, that there are big fixed costs up front, but then once you pay those costs, there's nothing beyond that really, but I mean, there's some low costs, but that's one of the ways you came up with your idea. And another thing that you're doing in that sort of same mindset is that you're being very transparent about your finances. Can you talk about why you want to be open like that? What the philosophy is behind that?
Well, I think that if you're asking people to support books and you have to, you know, gain their trust, and to gain people's trust, you need to be very open and transparent about what you're doing. So it seems very simple to me.
And you talked about your staff is kind of over on four different states, and I know you wrote on the blog that makes it an insurance nightmare for you, but how often do you guys then get together in person? I know you got together that one time last summer, but how many times have you gotten together since then, or do you have plans to get together again in person, all of you?
Well, at the beginning, we were getting together every month. We got washed out by one hurricane. We got together a couple times, and, you know, once you've developed a relationship with people, you don't really need as much in person. Our last time all together was after ALA annual. We went out to my aunt's house in the desert and hung out for a while. And we're going to do something similar in Seattle.
Andromeda, how has work been working in this virtual way worked out for you?
You know, it's fascinating. People ask me questions like, where's the company? And I sort of stare at them blankly, which you couldn't have done 5 years ago. You know, working remotely has pros and cons. I think in general, it's pretty neat, though, because you can work where you want, when you want, to a very large extent. There's a lot of flexibility, which is nice and humane. It is a little weird that, you know, your coworkers are like voices on the internet, or in a chat room, but, you know, you don't kind of run into them at a water cooler. And I find you have to sort of go out of your way to have trivial conversations, the sort of things that would come up automatically if you were working face to face, and that turn out to be super important for building culture. But it always feels like, you know, in a work chat room, you're only supposed to be talking about important things. And that's actually not true. It's very interesting. Like the, how do you build culture when it doesn't happen automatically? And how do you find tools that support that and have to think really consciously about problems that you might not have to think consciously about face to face? But, you know, it's really very cool to be able to just, I feel like working from the coffee house today. Okay, done.
And you guys are active yourselves and through the company on social media. Is there somebody in particular that's in charge of that for the Unglue It account? Does somebody in particular take care of those accounts for Facebook, Twitter, all that kind of stuff?
There are three of us who post to the Unglue It Twitter account. But we all have our own Twitter handles and our own audiences. So I think a lot of the water cooler stuff for us happens on Twitter. And there are a lot of other tools that we've been using that didn't exist like 3 or 4 years ago that really make what we're doing possible now.
Do you guys have some more campaigns getting ready to roll out once the current ones reach their ends? Is there anything you can talk about, or do you not want to talk about upcoming campaigns?
We usually don't talk about the campaigns before they launch. And we have, there's one, I'm not sure when it's going to launch, but it sounds like soon. We will launch them whenever they're ready, or whenever the rights holder, the author or the publisher wants to start it. So.
And we are, of course, always happy to talk to other authors and publishers who are interested in ungluing, and they should drop us a line at rights@gluejar.com if they have a book that they'd like to see a campaign for, too.
Yeah, I was just about to ask, how can people get in touch with you if they have more questions? So.
I guess rights@gluejar.com if they have questions about they're a rights holder and they want to unglue a book. support@gluejar.com for technical inquiries, or they could just email us. I mean, we're Eric and Andromeda, respectively.
Right. But support guarantees you'll get someone who actually will respond to it.
Yeah, several of us monitor support, so it's easier to get things turned around there quickly.
Andromeda and Eric, thank you so much for being on the show with me today and telling me all about Unglue It. And I hope everybody will go to the site and support a campaign, especially with this audience, Lauren's book.
Well, thanks for having us on the air.
Definitely.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. If you'd like to learn more about the podcast, you can visit circulatingideas.com. Or you can follow the show on Twitter @CircIdeas or on Tumblr @circulatingideas.tumblr.com. You can also like the show on Facebook @facebook.com/circulatingideas. And if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future interviews, you can contact the show @circulatingideas.mail@gmail.com. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time.